The General Assembly will hear an address by His Excellency Jose Mojica, President of the Eastern Republic of Uruguay. I request protocol to escort His Excellency. On behalf of the General Assembly, I have the honor to welcome to the United Nations His Excellency Jose Mojica, President of Eastern Republic of Uruguay, and invite him to address the Assembly. Excellency, you have the floor.
Amigos todos.
Dear friends, I come from the South. I am from the South, from the corner of the Atlantic and the Platte River. My country is a gentle, temperate, and plain where livestock graze. Its history is one of ports, leather, salted meat, wool, and meat. There were very dark decades with lances and horses until finally, with the beginning of the 20th century, we were in the vanguard of social affairs, of state affairs, and in education. I would say that social democracy was invented in Uruguay. For almost 50 years, the world saw us as a type of Switzerland. But in reality, we were, in economic matters, we were the bastard children of the British Empire. And when the empire ended, we experienced the bitter and terrible terms of trade, and we yearned for the past almost 50 years, remembering Maracana. Today, we have reemerged in this globalized world, perhaps learning from our pain. My personal history, that of a boy, because once I was a boy who, like others, wanted to change his time and his world, dreaming about a free and classless society. My mistakes, well, in part, they were the results of my time. Obviously, I assume my mistakes, but sometimes I cry, if only I had the strength that I had when we enjoyed such a utopia. However, I'm not looking towards the past because what we have today was created from the fertile ashes of yesterday? No, that is not the case. I'm not on this planet to settle scores or to reminisce. I am greatly anguished by the future that I will not see and which I committed myself to. Yes, it's possible to have a world with better humankind, but perhaps today the main task is to save life. But I'm from the South, and I come from the South to this assembly. I share with the thousands of poor compatriots in cities, in the jungles, in the plains, in the pampas, and the canyons of Latin America, the common fatherland which we are creating. I have on my shoulders the indigenous cultures, the remains of colonialism in the Malvinas, with the pointless and regrettable blockades of Cuba under the Caribbean sun. I bear as well the consequences of the electronic surveillance, which does nothing but create a distrust, and a distrust that poisons us needlessly. I also come with a huge social debt, and with the need to defend the Amazon, the seas, our great rivers of America. I also have the duty to fight on behalf of my fatherland for all, and so that Colombia can finally regain peace. And I have the duty to fight for tolerance. Tolerance is needed for those who are different and with whom we have differences and disagreements. We don't need tolerance for those who agree. Tolerance is the foundation of peaceful coexistence, understanding that in the world we are different. The fight against dirty economy, drug trafficking, theft and fraud, corruption, all of these contemporary scourges which were adopted by this opposite set of values, those who maintain that we are happier when we are richer, no matter what means are used. We have sacrificed the old immaterial gods, and now we are occupying the temple of the market god. This god organizes our economy, our politics, our habits, our lives, and even provides us with rates and credit cards and gives us the appearance of happiness. It seems that we have been born only to consume. And when we can no longer consume, we have a feeling of frustration, we suffer from poverty, and we are marginalized. It's true that today, in order to spend and to bury this debris in what is called the carbon footprint by science, if in this world we aspired to consume like the average American, we would need three planets in order to be able to live. In other words, our civilization has mounted this deceitful challenge. And as we go on, it's not possible for all to achieve this fulfillment. And in fact, our culture is becoming one of accumulation and a market culture. We promise a life of spending and squandering. In fact, this is a countdown against nature and against future humankind, a civilization against simplicity, against sobriety, against all natural cycles, but what is even worse, a civilization against freedom. That implies that we need time to experience human relationships. The most important thing, love, friendship, adventure, solidarity, family. A civilization against free time that doesn't pay, that can't be bought, And that allows us to contemplate the beauty of nature. We have destroyed the jungles, the green jungles, the true jungles, and we've created anonymous cement jungles. We have tackled sedentarianism with walkers, insomnia with pills, solitude with electronics. Are we happy when we are so far from the human essence? We have to ask ourselves this question. Stunned, we have fled from our biology, which defends life for life itself as a superior cause in itself, and we've replaced it by functional consumerism and accumulation. Politics, the eternal mother of human life, which has remained wedded to the economy and to the market. From one adventure to another, politics can only perpetuate itself, and as such, it has delegated its power, and it spends its time fighting for government. Unleashed, human history marches forward, buying and selling everything, and innovating in order to be able to negotiate what is, in a way, unnegotiable. There's marketing for everything. There's marketing for cemeteries, for funeral services, for maternity wards, for fathers, for mothers, for grandparents and uncles, including secretaries' cars and vacations. Everything is business. However, marketing campaigns deliberately target children and their psychology in order to influence those who are older and to have safe territory for the future. There is a great deal of evidence of this abominable technology that sometimes leads us to frustration. The average man of our time, the average inhabitants of our large cities wander between financial institutions and the tedious routine of offices, which are sometimes moderated by air conditioning. He dreams of vacations and freedom. He dreams of being able to pay his bills until one day his heart stops and he says goodbye. There will be other soldiers who will fall to the jaws of the market, thus ensuring accumulation. The crisis is really the powerlessness of politics, which is incapable of understanding that humankind has not escaped and will not escape the feeling of a nation, a feeling which is almost instilled in our DNA. But today, it's time to begin to fight to prepare a world without borders. The globalized economy has no other inclination but private interest, the private interest of very few. And every nation state looks at its own stability. And today, the great task for our peoples, in our humble way of looking at things, is the everything. As if this were not enough, productive capitalism, the truly productive capitalism, is a prisoner of the banks. And the banks are at the summit of global power. but more clearly, the world is shouting for global rules that would respect the achievements of science, which are abundant, but science does not govern for the good. We need today a very lengthy agenda of definitions. We have to define working hours. We need convergence among currencies. We have to finance the global struggle for water and against desertification. We have to see how we can recycle more and how we can counter global warming. What are the limits of every human task? We must achieve a broad planetary consensus to unleash solidarity among the most oppressed and to punish and tax waste and speculation. Mobilizing the large economies not to create disposable goods, but rather useful goods. Useful goods without built-in obsolescence in order to help the poorest in the world. Useful goods against global poverty. It's 1,000 times more profitable to turn towards a useful neo-Keynesianism on a global scale in order to abolish the most flagrant scandals of this world. Perhaps our world requires fewer global bodies, fewer people who organize fora and conferences, which only help hotel chains and airlines. And perhaps no one really benefits from their decisions. We have to go back to what is old and eternal in human life, along with science. This science, which must work for humankind and not to become rich. With this, with men of science, the counselors of humankind, we have to build agreements for the entire world. Neither the large nation states nor transnational companies, and not to mention the financial system, none of them should govern the human world. Yes, lofty politics combined with scientific wisdom. That is the source, the science that is not attracted by gain, but which is looking towards the future and which tells us what we don't expect. How many years ago did they tell us in Kyoto certain things which we finally learned? We have to convene intelligence at the helm. Actions of this nature and others which we think are crucial, but which require life and not accumulation. Obviously, we will not fool ourselves. These things will not happen. Things like this will not happen. There is still much pointless sacrifice ahead of us. We still have to deal with consequences. and not tackle the causes. Today, the world is incapable of establishing planetary regulations, globalized regulations. And this is due to the failure of global politics, the politics that deals with everything. For a time, we will be protected by more or less regional agreements. Which are going to establish a deceitful free trade, which in the end will build protectionist barriers, supranational barriers in some regions of our planet. Certain branches of industry will grow, and there will be services devoted to saving the environment. And hence, we will be reassured for some time. Of course, accumulation will continue undeterred for the pleasure of the financial system. There will still be wars and fanaticism until nature makes this civilization, makes this order unviable. Perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps our vision is a bit too crude, ruthless, and we see man as a unique creature, the only creature on Earth capable of going against his own species. I repeat, what some call the ecological crisis of the planet is the result of the overwhelming triumph of human ambition. That's our triumph, but also our defeat. Because we are helpless at the political level to tackle a new era that we have helped to build and we don't realize it. Why do I say this? Just look at the data. It's true that the population has quadrupled and GDP has grown 20-fold in the last century. Since 1990, global trade grew by about 12% every year for a period of 6 years. We can continue to provide further data on this globalization that we'll see and will show clearly how globalization is marching forward. What's happening? We are entering another period at great speed, but with politicians, parties, young people and old people faced with the accumulation of change, which we cannot even realize. We can't handle globalization because we don't have a global thought process. We don't know if it's a cultural barrier or if it's a biological limit. Our time is a revolutionary one, like humankind has never seen before. But it doesn't have a conscious or simply instinctive inclination. Nor is there an organized political inclination, because we haven't even had a philosophy for what we are doing now, given the speed of change. greed, this devastating greed that has pushed us towards material, technical, and scientific progress, which has made our time, which has made this a phenomenal period, moving forward on so many fronts. Paradoxically, the same greed has pushed us to an abyss. A history that we don't know. A time without history. And we no longer have the eyes nor the collective intelligence to continue colonizing our planet and changing ourselves. Because if there's one characteristic that humans have, it's that we are conquerors. We are anthropological conquerors. It seems that things are taking a life of their own and subjecting humankind. On the one hand, we see glimpses of a possible direction, but it's impossible for us to make collective decisions for this everything. Individual greed has triumphed over the superior greed of the species. Let's clarify this. What is this everything that we are talking about? What is this everything for us? It's the global life of the Earth, including human life, with all of the fragile balances that make it possible for our species to perpetuate itself. Now, on the other hand, more simply and more clearly, in the West, because that's where we come from, even though we come from the South, republics that were created to affirm that men and women are equal, that no one is more than anyone else, that their governments should represent the common good, justice, and equity. Very often, the republics are distorted and fall into oblivion, forgotten by people, common people who walk the streets. They weren't the republics that were created in order to vegetate, but rather they are a functional part. They are a cry and were made to be a part of the life of peoples, and hence republics belong to the majorities, and they must fight to promote the interests of the majority. Due to these feudal memories or this overwhelming classism, or perhaps due to the consumeristic culture that surrounds us all, republics very frequently in their directions have adopted a daily life which excludes the common man and this common man should be the main cause of the political struggle and the life of the Republic. Governments, Republican governments, should look more and more like their respective peoples in the way they govern and in their commitment to life. The fact is that we still cultivate these feudal archaisms. We make hierarchical differences, which in the long run undermine the best of our republics. The interplay of these and other factors take us back to our prehistory. And today, it's impossible to give up war when politics fails. Hence, economies are strangled and we waste resources. Listen to this, dear friends. Every minute in the life of our world, every minute we spend $2 million in military budgets around the world. $2 million a minute is spent on military budgets. Medical research for all manner of diseases, which has made a great deal of progress, and which is a blessing for the promise of a longer life. This research only enjoys a fifth of the military budget. This process, which we cannot emerge from, means that there will be hatred and fanaticism, sources of new wars, and this would also lead to a waste. I know that it's very easy poetically to criticize ourselves at the national level, and I think it would be somewhat disingenuous in this world to say that there are resources that could be saved and that could be spent on other useful things. That would be possible, once again, if we were capable of establishing global agreements and prevention, as well as planetary policies, which would guarantee peace and which would give the weakest guarantees that we don't have. We would have to cut back enormous resources. But we can ask ourselves a question with this humankind today. What direction would we be headed in without these global agreements? And that's where we are today, because we cannot reason as a species, let alone individuals. Global institutions, especially today, are powerless and lie in the shadow of great nations. Obviously, these want to retain their power. They block the United Nations in its action, which was created with a hope and as a dream for peace for humankind. But what is even worse, they uprooted from planetary democracy. Because we're not all equal. We cannot all be equal in this world where there are those who are stronger and those who are weaker. As a result, it's a wounded planetary democracy. And it prevents a global agreement for peace. And hence, we let us treat those diseases where they appear. And the major powers treat them how they wish. And we see this from afar. Dear friends, I think it's very difficult to invent a force which is worse than the chauvinistic nationalism of the superpowers. A force which is liberating for the weakest and which is behind this nationalism, liberating for the weakest. It becomes an oppressive instrument in the hands of those who are strong. And we have seen many examples of this in the last 2 centuries. The United Nations, our United Nations, is languishing and is becoming more and more bureaucratic due to a lack of power and autonomy. And there's no recognition of this democracy for the weakest, who are the majority on this planet. By way of example, a very small example, our small country which in absolute terms contributes the largest number of soldiers to peace missions in Latin America. And we go where they ask us to go. But we are small. We are weak. And where resources are distributed and where decisions are taken, we can't even serve coffee. In our deepest heart of hearts, there is an enormous desire to help man emerge from this prehistory. And people who live with war are still in prehistory, despite the many artifacts that he could build. As long as man doesn't leave this prehistory and doesn't do away with war when politics fails, this is the long march and challenge that we have ahead of us. And we say this in full awareness. We know, we are familiar with the solitude of war. However, these dreams mean, these challenges that are on the horizon mean that we have to fight for an agenda of global agreements that would begin to govern our history. And we must overcome, step by step, the threats to life. Our species as such must have a government for all of humankind, which would overcome individualism and which would create political leaders that would take the path to science and not simply that of their immediate interests, of those who are governing and suffocating us. At the same time, we have to understand that the poor of the world are not from Africa or Latin America. They're part of humankind, all of them. And as such, this means that we must assist them so that they could lead decent lives. The necessary resources exist. We find it in this predatory waste of our civilization. A few days ago, they said in California, in an agency, there was a light in honor of the firemen that was lit for 100 years. It has been lit for 100 years. Friends, how many millions of dollars have they taken from our pockets, creating this junk so that people buy and buy? But this globalization, for our planet and for our life, means a brutal cultural change. That's what history requires from us. The material basis has changed, and it has changed man with our culture. With this culture, it's as if nothing has happened. And instead of globalization governing us, we govern it. About 20 years ago, we discussed the very humble Tobin tax, which could not be applied at a global level. All of the banks, all of the financial institutions rose up against it. Their private property was harmed and other things as well. However, this is the paradox. With talent and with the collective work with science, men and women, step by step, can make deserts green again. Men and women can take agriculture to the seas. We can develop our agriculture with salt water. The power of humankind is concentrated on what is essential, and that is immeasurable. And there we see the great sources of energy, which we know from photosynthesis. What do we know about photosynthesis? There's a great deal of energy in the world if we work together to use it properly. It's possible to eliminate poverty from the planet. It's possible to create stability. It will be possible for future generations. If they begin to reason as a species and not just as individuals, it would be possible to take life to the galaxies and continue with this dream of conquest that we have in us, in our DNA. But for these dreams to come true, we will have to govern ourselves as a species, or we will die, we will succumb. Because we're not capable of maintaining the civilization which we have developed. This is our dilemma. We shouldn't spend our time remedying consequences. Let us think about the deep-rooted causes. Let's think about the civilization of waste. What it's doing is taking away time from human life, dealing with pointless matters. Let us remember that human life is a miracle. We are alive as a result of a miracle, and nothing is more important than life. And our duty, our biological duty, is above everything else. We must respect life, promote it, take care of it, reproduce it, and understand that we are the species. Thank you very much.
On behalf of the General Assembly, I wish to thank the President of the Eastern Republic of Uruguay for his statement just made. May I request representatives to remain seated while we greet the President.